Well, welcome to this last session of what has been a very long, but I think for those of you who have been here all day, I'm sure you'll agree with me, a very rich and rewarding day. For those of you who weren't here this morning, my name is Daniel Weinstock. I am one of the interim co-directors, or co-interim directors, not sure, of the center, which in a sense is having its actual launch today. And so it gives me great pleasure, and for those of you who were here this morning, my name is still Daniel Weinstock. It gives me great pleasure to be able to chair what will be a slightly different kind of panel from the ones that we've had. So we are launching today a center which we think is distinctive, not unique in a kind of categorical way, but distinctive in at least two ways. First of all, it is a center that rather than focusing on the urban phenomenon in general, that's my name. issues linked to urbanization in the modern world is actually focusing on a particular city, namely this city, Montreal, in its distinctiveness. Of course, I'm sure that as our work goes on in the years to come, we will be led to comparing Montreal to other cities in various respects. But the focus is really on a particular city, and that's one way in which we think that what we're doing is distinctive. The other way in which we think that what we're doing is distinctive is we're really throwing, from the very word go, we're throwing into the mix people who really, really aren't used to working together. There is a very, so some of the usual suspects that you would expect to find in an urban studies center are around, urban planners, architects, et cetera, but we also have people from the music faculty. We have literary people, we have historians, we have philosophers, we have law professors, and so the idea is that, you know, if you have something to say about Montreal, you know, one of my dreams is to have a geologist as part of our team to help us understand how the stuff that we are actually sitting on has had an impact on the way in which we've built up the city. So the idea, are you a geologist?
That's where PhD gets right.
Is it really?
Yeah.
We should talk. So I think that that's the second way in which what we're doing is quite distinctive. We really have not defined any a priori limits on the kinds of disciplinary perspectives which we think both will and ought to inform our multidisciplinary, decades investigation on this city. So I think we have an idea of the kind of way in which we hope to go forward, but obviously we still don't know exactly what will be going on specifically within this container that I've just described in function of these two specificities. So to help us think about these issues, we have three, I think, really leading thinkers who have thought about urban space from a variety, again, of disciplinary, very different disciplinary perspectives. I'm going to introduce them in a second. Before I do so, however, I want to make sure that everybody knows that after this last session, you're all invited to a reception, which will take place outside, which is being hosted by our very gracious host, Greta Chambers. Thank you very much for that. So I hope you'll all be able to stick around and talk to us about Montreal and in a more relaxed setting. You'll actually be able to get some alcohol for all of your travails today. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that they should stick around after this is over. And without further ado, I would like to introduce the three people who we have brought together to help us think about the avenues that we should think about going down as we embark upon this adventure. I left my bio notes in a bag, which is all the way over there, and I'm not going to ask anybody to come and get it, so I'm just going to introduce our speakers in a more informal way. Starting to my immediate right, Mark Kingwell is a philosopher at the University of Toronto, and he has written on a dizzying array of subjects. As I was looking through his bibliography, it struck me that he is, I am sure, the only person in the world of whom it is true to say that he has written both on fishing and on the Empire State Building. Both in book-length format. His most recent book is called Unruly Voices, and it is Contribution Theory of Democracy, a collection of essays on the theory of democracy. To his right, Simon Harel, qui est professeur de littérature comparée à l'Université de Montréal. Simon et moi avons été, il y a nombreuses années, quelques années, impliqués ensemble dans un projet interdisciplinaire sur la notion de confiance, sur le phénomène de la confiance. Simon a également écrit de manière extrêmement prolifique. Quand je lui ai demandé ce qu'il voulait que je mentionne, il a mentionné un livre qui va paraître dans 2 semaines, et je suis sûr que vous allez tous vous précipiter pour l'acheter, parce qu'il est d'une très grande actualité pour nous en tant que Montréalais. Donc, Réflexion urbaine sur la place Émilie Gamelin, hein, qui donc est une place qui a eu son histoire récente très significative dans l'histoire des dernières années de Montréal. Et to the far right, spatially, of the table, Professor Saskia Sassen, who, as the saying goes, probably needs no introduction to anybody in this room, so I will go ahead and introduce her. Professor Sassen, I think, has set a lot of the agenda for the work that we are all doing today from a variety of different disciplinary horizons. Her work on territory, her work on global cities has really contributed to rethinking the way in which we theorize cities in the modern world, the way in which we theorize interdisciplinary work on cities, and it's a very great honor to be able to host her here. She's just flown in from Japan, and so that increases the debt of gratitude that we have towards her for being with us today. So the format will be, I have just basically, without my panelists having really noticed it, posed them a question. What should we be doing? What are the avenues? What are the paths that we should be exploring in this, I think, lovely shiny new container that we've given ourselves with the CRIEM. And if anybody knows what the best way to pronounce the English acronym should be, now's the time to start. CIRM. CIRM, yeah. And so they will speak for a while. I have no particular, I'm not going to impose any draconian discipline upon them. And then the hope is that we can have a conversation, which I'll try to get going between them and eventually involve you as well. And we can then spill out into the atrium over there to continue the conversation over wine and music. So without any further ado, we haven't actually talked about the order in which we would proceed.
Maybe Saskia.
So perhaps Saskia, would you like to go first?
Whatever, sure. Well, first let me say that I'm delighted to be, oh yes, because I have barely voice left. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for the kind introduction. Funny, kind, I don't know, either way, you know, somewhere in between. Now, I'm not an expert on Montreal, and so I am not going to talk about Montreal. I would not presume, not certainly when I'm in Montreal. Maybe in Tokyo I would talk about Montreal, but not here. So what I thought might be helpful is to sort of give you a bit of an analytic passage, or paseo, as we say in Spanish, through the question of the urban and what is happening today and what should happen. So let me just start. I'll be very brief. I know it sounds like I'm going to be talking for hours. I won't. Don't worry then. Just a few items. So the first thing for me is always, I cannot just say simply a city is a city. You know, we do that all the time, actually. So I have to find, if the city is the X, I need to find the non-X to understand. So I would say that if you're thinking about Montreal, you know, if I were in Montreal and studying, I would do that too. So one way of thinking of the city is that it is a complex but incomplete system. And in that combination of complexity and incompleteness lies the capacity of cities to have very long lives, to keep reinventing themselves, often across millennia. Now, that also tells us something immediately, which is that density per se is not enough to have cityness. So you can have an endless row of very tall office buildings. That's density. Is it city? No. And that is not incomplete. That is totally closed and hence subject to rapid decay. And we have seen that, of course. Same thing with very dense housing. Right? I mean, tall housing, tower after tower to tower. That is density. A lot of people. But it's not complex and it's not incomplete. So I am trying to restrict my concept of the city to something very specific. And today, we increasingly have densities, enormous varieties of densities, but each density is a kind of homogeneous event. And so I think that one very important struggle is to keep cities complex and incomplete. And so a second point then, which is a question of technologies and how, you know, increasingly all-encompassing systems are being deployed when new cities are being built. Remember that around the world right now, there are like 500 cities that are being built. Today, there are enterprises that do full-time that. You can buy your city. And some elites do. You know, they really do. They buy a city. And so now, those cities, one of the features, you know, because of the contemporary period, because of all the supply of interesting technologies, etc., is that big producers of corporate producers of technical systems tend to be increasingly ambitious. And it could just be a purely sort of engineer's obsession. How much can I encompass in this one system? I mean, the image, it's a distortion. The image is that you plop down a complex system inside a tower, right, a building, and the more it does, the better. Well, that is, of course, when you think, just to take one dynamic, the increasing rate of obsolescence of technologies means that they can bring down a whole building. So that also reduces, I would say, technology has to be handled with great care. Now, what I'm giving you is a very exaggerated image, but actually, if you look places like Songdo, to mention one, but there are hundreds in the making like that, you know, they are really trying to do this. There is a kind of notion of a positive valence and a value-added ambition. When you are going to deal with complex technical systems, make them big, make them be able to do everything. The notion, and it's truly notional notion, is that they are sort of, that you have choices. You know, that they are sort of open. They are not. They give you five choices. That's not open. You know what I'm talking about, right? That all your systems are controlled by something, and then some more even. So one, for me, a second issue then is this notion, how do we urbanize technology? A lot of technology can be very useful in cities. I'm all for technology. But we have to really make a distinction between technologies that are like urban infrastructures where it doesn't matter, you can just make it as good a technological system as you can. And then there are other deployments of technology that are more problematic. So to give you an example of something that I hope cities start doing, given the technology, and this is not infrastructure, it's partly infrastructural, but it goes more into the social question. Because I think that well-deployed and well-designed technologies can really add to the urbanity of a city. And so let me give you an example that is a bit of a fantasy for me. Imagine thinking of an open sourcing. Am I talking too long already?
No, you're fine. Okay, fine.
So that every neighborhood is part of a network where it can produce or deliver, put online, you know, circulate, send its understanding of the city. Every neighborhood produces its own kind, in a complex city, its own kind of knowledge about the city. And imagine that, and I include there, say, very poor neighborhoods where they maybe don't speak the main language of the city. They have knowledge, including the homeless. The homeless have knowledge. And it's a very different kind of knowledge from urban experts. So I love what I always say is, you know, the homeless in New York know far more about rats than your average expert on rats, including a biologist. Because, and you know that New York has more rats than people. And so imagine the homeless person knows everything about the rats, and they also know at the limit how a rat can be good for a city. So I'm just talking about using a technology to bring together the diverse knowledges that different actors, different neighborhoods have. That, to me, is an interesting type of knowledge. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with the elementary example that has been very successful and replicated, which is a version of what I just said, but it is about potholes, right? The municipality of Boston, right? That you have an application, you just have to push a button, pothole, and then, you know, immediately the location, et cetera, et cetera. That is very useful. Besides being useful, second level value added is that it begins to mobilize people. They feel, this city is mine. I also have knowledge about the city. But then you can, you know, expand it to more complex domains if you want. Third, and this is the last one for now for these introductory remarks, is a question of indeterminacy. I think that indeterminacy is critical to have cityness. And we are really in a period of increasingly overdetermined structures. It used to be that you had a lot of little offices and little buildings, and now you have one huge complex that has it all. You know, and whether it's just a technology or whether it's just all the buildings. So it seems to me that one of the challenges, besides the challenge that I just described, right, incorporating also poor neighborhoods in terms of a knowledge vector about the city, that to me is a democratizing of urban space. And this is another way of democratizing urban space, to make sure that indeterminacy remains as a feature, and the big battle is against overdetermined systems. Now, there is a particular kind of system that I have been working on lately that I would like to briefly address, and that is a question of surveillance systems. And the argument, very quickly put, is let me start with a question. What are the spaces that are rich enough, varied enough, and sort of, you know, open and complex, where no matter all that surveillance apparatus, we can live our lives, because our lives are complex and rich, and we can sort of not be, you know. And I think it's cities. And I want to show you a couple of slides here. So this is a slide that is in the public. I only bring in stuff in the public domain. In fact, this is a slide that has been around for a while, but only lately have people begun to understand it. This is what we know. What we don't know is what we don't know. This is 10,000 buildings, mostly private firms, that do full-time, round-the-clock, every day, et cetera, data gathering about all of us in the United States, and some, and some more. We know that, right? And so there are a couple of things that I want to bring in here. One is, to me, this kind of system is a threat beyond the question of being surveyed and invaded. It's a threat because it enters our subjectivity. It begins to control it. So my question then back is again, what are the spaces? Well, we can't forget about it. You know, we can't destroy this. It will self-destruct, I think, because it is an excessive abuse of its own power by the system. That, historically speaking, I am always interested in seeing very powerful systems. You know, it's a curve. They get more and more power, more power, and then they begin to decay. It's like an algorithm that can decay. And so, you know, so my question is not, my God, how do we control it? How do we limit? My question is, what are the spaces where we can live our lives in complex ways without being obsessed and sort of and undermined? And by doing that, having such spaces, and cities, of course, are those kinds of spaces, we actually, that's the most effective way of combating this, because what other instruments do we really have to combat them? Now, I want to give you one other slide here. This is just an example of what we're talking about. So in Washington and the surrounding area, 33 building complexes for top secret intelligence work are under construction or have been built since September 2001. Together, they occupy about 17 million square feet, the equivalent of almost three pentagons or 22 U.S. Capitol buildings. Now, I mentioned these other ones. Pentagon is, of course, a war zone. And the Capitol building is not supposed to have democracy, right? There's overwhelming material presence. You know, in New York City, they can't put such buildings. In Washington, you know, they spread wherever. So I really think that why doesn't I just want to eliminate this slide, and now it suddenly doesn't work. Oh, there we go. So to me, the city is then a site for contesting, but we have to keep it complex, and we have to keep it incomplete, for contesting very powerful and overwhelming systems, whether they are technical systems, large-scale, all-encompassing technical systems, or at the other end, perhaps this type of total data gathering and surveillance system. Thank you.